Up next is a rebroadcast of The Enviro Show. This episode of The Enviro Show was recorded live in the studios of WXOJLP, Northampton.
I'm all for green energy, but do we really need to ruin Nantucket Sound with Cape Wind?
No. There are lots of better and cheaper locations for a wind project, on land and in deeper water. Other projects are being proposed up and down the East Coast that won't risk our economy, our environment, and our safety.
So why are we wasting time talking about this stalled project just miles off our beaches?
Because this private developer got a sweetheart no-bid deal to seize 25 square miles of our pristine waters, and he's managed to convince people that it's his project or bust. In reality, there are better locations that won't destroy Nantucket Sound. We can say yes to wind, but no to Cape Wind.
Since there are better alternatives, how can we stop Cape Wind?
For starters, we can volunteer, donate, and go to saveoursound.org to find out more ways to help. The battle is far from over, and we will win only with your continued support. Because once Nantucket Sound is gone, it's gone forever.
Now, from the complexity-free zone, it's the Enviro Show, coming to you on WMCB 107.9 Low Power FM Greenfield.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake. Birds and snakes and airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Churn world. Serve its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Beat it up and knock. Speak. Grunt. No strength. The ladder starts to clatter with fear. Fight down. High wire in a fire. Represented seven games in a government for hire. With the furies beating down your neck. Team, my team reporters, Babble, Trump, Kevin Kraft. Look at that, no plane, fine, then. Uh-oh, overflow, population common, do what it'll do. Save yourself, serve yourself, world, serve your own needs. Listen to your heartbeat, dummy with the rapture and the reverend and the right, right. You patriotic, patriotic, slam, fight, bright, light, feel it, pretty sight.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
6 o'clock, TV hour, no get caught in four towers, slice and burn, return. Listen to yourself churn. Locking in, uniform and book burning, blood letting every motive escalate. Automotive, incinerate. Light a candle, light a motor, step down, step down. Watching heel crush, crush, uh-oh, this means no fear. Cavalier, renegade, steer clear. Turn them in, a tournament, a tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine.
Drifted by mountains, sit in a line. Leonard Bernstein, Leonette Brezhnev, Lenny Bush and Lester Banks. Birthday party, cheesecake, jelly bean, boom. Symbiotic, patriotic, slam, but nap. Right,
right. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine.
Greetings, Earthlings. It's the Living Simply Enviro Show. I'm Dio. I'm here with
I'm Glenn Ayers.
And we don't know where Gene is. Gene, are you out there?
No doubt causing trouble somewhere.
No doubt. New Year's resolution time. How about we live simply so others can simply live? Jonathan and Susan Van Ransen of the Wendell Rural Simple Living Committee call in to talk about their efforts in Wendell. One of the issues we'll be discussing is energy use per person on a global scale. You can check our blog for a link to that and check out your energy use on a global scale. Just Google in the Enviro Show. That'll get you there. As usual, we wander into the Enviro Show echo chamber for some recent news. Also, we return to the quote of the week and our evaluation segment. But first, it's time for... You guessed it. Revenge of the Critters. Carp invasion. Boaters beware. This has been in New York Times. It's been in NPR. And now it's on the Enviro Show. We're quoting here from the Columbia, Missourian. Let's do a little background first. Dwayne Chapman of the U.S. Geological Survey's Columbia Environmental Research Center on New Haven Road said that silver carp and its non-jumping relative, the bighead carp, these guys are sometimes called Asian carp, are invasive species from Asia. Oh, I just said that. That are prevalent from the lower Mississippi River to Gavin's Point Dam in South Dakota. Silver carp become common in this area about 5 years ago. Asian carp were brought to the United States 30 years ago to control water quality in private aquaculture facilities and escaped from fish farms in the 80s and 90s. There's a familiar background. Now to the scary part. Silver carp and their airborne antics pose an increasing danger to boaters and recreational users in the river. Silver carp normally range from 10 to 20 pounds, Chapman said, which is, quote, plenty big enough to put the hurt on you. Being struck by a carp this size while traveling near 20 miles per hour can be devastating. There have been instances of boaters knocked overboard. Breeding tubercles on the fins of males can cause abrasions and potentially cuts. The Geological Survey lost a $500 satellite phone that was in a container specifically built to guard against carp attack. When the carp dislodged the entire container and sent it overboard, Chapman said, "Oy." Chapman has also warned boaters to protect radios, fish finders, fairings, and fishing rods in consoles. Jumping carp have landed on the throttle, causing boats to drastically change speed. Once, sending a USGS boat up a muddy bank. No, I pressed the wrong one. This is the muddy bank. Chapman cautions that carp generally jump behind boats, so water skiing and following boats can be risky. I think that's the end of it. It is. So, there you go. Another invasive species.
It's the gypsy moth of the water.
Causing trouble. Yeah, but, ooh, this one hurts.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Viral Show Echo Chamber. This op-ed in the New York Times reminds us that to save the planet, we must save the seas. This from the New York Times, as I said. For the many disappointments of the recent climate talks in Copenhagen, there was at least one clear positive outcome. This, by the way, is a op-ed piece from Dan LaFolle. And that was the progress made on a program called Reducing Emissions from Forest Deforestation and Forest Degradation. By the way, the acronym is RED, and that's what we use now so that I won't stumble all over my mouth.
R-E-D-D.
Yes, RED. Under this program, key elements of which were agreed on in Copenhagen. Sorry, there's a problem with that. Error. Yeah. But we'll get to that in the next piece. Developing countries could be compensated by preserving forests, peat soil, swamps, and fields that are efficient absorbers of carbon dioxide, the primary heat-trapping gas linked to global warming. This approach, which takes advantage of the power of nature itself, is an economical way to store large amounts of carbon. But the program is limited in that it includes only those carbon sinks found on land. We now need to look for similar opportunities to curb carbon change in the oceans. Few people may realize it, but in addition to producing most of the oxygen we breathe, the ocean absorbs some 25% of current annual carbon dioxide emissions. Half the world's carbon stocks are held in plankton, mangrove, salt marshes, and other marine life. So it is at least as important to preserve this ocean life as it is to preserve the forest, to secure its role in helping us adapt to and mitigate climate change. Seagrass meadows, for example, which flourish in shallow coastal waters, account for 15% of the ocean's total carbon storage, and underwater forests of kelp store huge amounts of carbon, just as forests do on land. The most efficient natural carbon sink of all is not land, but in the ocean, in the form of, a species of seagrass that forms vast underwater meadows that wave in the currents just as fields of grass on the land sway. And it's Posidonia oceanica. Worldwide coastal habitats like these are being lost because of human activity. Extensive areas have been altered by land reclamation and fish farming, while coastal pollution and overfishing have further damaged habitats and reduced the variety of species. It is now clear that such degradation has not only affected the livelihoods and well-being of more than 2 billion people dependent on coastal ecosystems for food, it has also reduced the capacity of these ecosystems to store carbon. So there, that piece from New York Times. Now, you recall that the RED situation,
which stood for
reduced emissions from deforestation and degradation.
Yeah.
This we've taken from the Indy Media site, and it's a little critique on RED Redux. So, Copenhagen is over, with forest mentioned in one paragraph of a politically ambiguous, quote, Copenhagen Accord, and an incomplete RED agreement stapled on the back with major safeguard and finance issues still unresolved. So, along with many other people, you might be wondering, what happens now for RED and the world's tropical forest? Not much, it seems. Forests remain under the threat for all the same reasons that we've historically cut them down. Illegal logging, industrial agricultural expansion, and destructive development projects. At least for one more year, business as usual is certainly going to continue, and tropical forests will probably continue to be lost at a shocking rate of 1 acre per second. The UNFCCC process will continue as the RED Working Group meets again in Bonn in June to work out technical issues, hopefully starting with where they left off at Copenhagen and further strengthening key provisions rather than going back to square one. Various other processes intended to address the rapid destruction of the world's tropical forest will also continue, but without resolution of critical environmental and social safeguards, notably including recognition and respect for indigenous peoples' rights that a Copenhagen Forest Agreement might have provided. Most notable of these include the UN RED Initiative, the World Bank Forest Carbon Partnership Facility, and new initiatives started to help countries with RED readiness planning. And in closing, it says, we can't save the forest if we don't save the climate. And that means that RED, without a larger climate deal, is no deal at all.
Right, exactly.
So there
no
that.
Deal.
No deal. Hey, quote of the week. We haven't done that in a while.
Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. Stop.
Short and sweet. If the climate were a bank, the U.S. would have saved it.
Now, who said that?
Who do you think said that? All right, you get, Glenn, you get.
I know who it
guesses.
Is. I know who it is.
Who?
You go.
Hugo Chavez, you bet. All right, and now we're going to jump back to the Enviro Show Echo Chamber because Treehugger has an interesting piece about Cape Wind.
Yeah.
Would you like to...
No, no, go ahead. You're the Cape Wind guy.
Well...
You have been so all over Cape Wind for years.
Well, you'll recall in the past, the most recent wrinkle for Cape Wind was that the Wampanoags who dwell there on the vineyard and on the mainland in Mashpee were a little upset because the proposed Cape Wind project would be put on ancestral land that used to be above water.
Right.
They may have it sacred to them, and there may be burials there. So they complained to the National Park Service, I believe. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, they requested consultation.
Yes.
On designating the Nantucket Sound area as a cultural resource area.
Yes. So now the National Park Service...
I think what happened was, too, the tribes petitioned the National Park Service to analyze the area and see if it is worthy of designation as a national historic, scenic, cultural area.
Right. And they announced yesterday, the National Park Service, that the Nantucket Sound was now eligible for listing on the National Register of Historic Places. If the tribes and the wind farm developers cannot reach an agreement by March 1st, Secretary of Interior Ken Salazar has indicated he can step in and decide the project's fate personally. And that does oops. Because Ken Salazar is very much in favor, we believe, of Cape Wind going in to be a feather in Obama's cap, a feather in the governor's cap. And certainly not a feather in the cap of the Wampanoags.
Yeah, we don't know exactly where Martha Coakley will be on this issue, do we?
I haven't heard. I don't know that came up.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But we know Teddy was very opposed to it.
Here's the next paragraph in this Treehugger piece says, is there another suitable location in Massachusetts?
I wonder, is there?
One would think that they might have looked into that like years ago.
Yeah.
Well... Personally, this is the writer here, considering the opposition to the location of the project, I've long thought everyone should just call it a day on this one, despite the urgent need for the U.S. to get into the offshore wind power game. Remember, there isn't a single functioning offshore wind farm in the nation. Surely another suitable location can be found, sunk costs and personal drive of the developers notwithstanding. The issue to only grow as renewable expands, but there is the greater issue that is only going to grow as more big wind power projects move forward. Calling in NIMBYism doesn't help the situation, though surely in some cases it is accurate. And yada, yada, yada. So that's at treehugger.com if you want to check that out.
Today, yep.
Yes. It's all over the media today.
And... we have anything from the new boss?
No.
No?
Not
okay.
Today.
All right.
No. But we do have something from our evaluation segment. But I thought maybe since we'll be talking later in the show briefly with folks at Emma's Revolution that we might play Silent Spring.
Oh, yeah. Let's play a tune off of one of their albums. It's, I guess it's just called One. This is Emma's Revolution. And they're going to be... at the Echo Lake Coffee House this Thursday at 7:30. That's in Leverett Town Hall. And this is Emma's Revolution.
One second.
Rachel saw the changes in the coastline, in the fish, in the wildlife, the forest and the trees. She knew these were canaries in the coal mine. She felt it in her body, in the air and in the seas. Silent spring, silent spring. In the air there is a silent killer creeping, wafting over all our houses, streaming in and out our lungs. Poisoning us now as we lay sleeping. Rachel. Angel Carson warned the nation for our daughters and our sons. Silence bring, silence bring. Strands, while families spray weed killer all around their home. Cancer's growing rampant in the heartland, while corporations profit from the seeds that they have sown. Silent spring, silent spring. Zenitech sells pesticides to farmers. Salic earns its profits in the name of cancer care. Rachel and 2 million women suffered. Now Zenitech bought Salic to increase its market share. Silent spring, silent spring. Saw the changes in the coastline, in the fish, in the wildlife, the forest and the trees. She was the canary in the coal mine, but her voice, unlike her body, won't be silenced by disease. Silent spring, silent spring.
And welcome back to the Enviro Show. This is Glenn Ayers, and I'm here with Dio. That was a tune off of one of their CDs. We'll be playing another song at the end of the show. And we'll be doing an interview with them at about 7:15 or so stick around. But right now, on the line with us, we have Jonathan and Susan von Ronson from Wendell, who have been leading an effort in the town of Wendell to bring some sanity into living with a proposal to allow a simpler way of existing, simpler for the ecosystem and simpler for our complex world.
Such as?
You folks want to introduce yourselves and tell everybody what you've been working on there in Wendell?
Sure. Susan, why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm Susan von Ronson. And I've been in Wendell here over 25 years now. And Jonathan and I are proposing to build a two-story, 750-square-foot non-electric apartment in the barn that we just rebuilt. And having a bit of trouble, which Jonathan will tell you all about.
And that apartment would be for ourselves to live in. I mean, the idea is that we wanted to sort of move into that living situation. We'd like to have been in it even longer. We lived like that for a number of years, for about 15 or 19 years, out on Bear Mountain.
That's right.
Way
but
up. We were too far out to be much of a part of the town, and so we moved into the center of town, and we kind of adopted the electric lifestyle when we did that, so in the house that we bought.
Right. When you were way out when you were way out in the park there, you had no electricity, right?
And right.
You heated with wood, right?
Exactly. Yeah, we had basically the same systems that we're proposing to use for this apartment. So we experimented and found them to be very workable. So I'm Jonathan von Ronson, and Susan and I you know, got together when we were, when I was just starting to build that house out in Bear Mountain.
You lived out there simply without electricity.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a, it, you know, it was a beautiful stone house, and it was a rather elegant living situation, and you know, we lit with, we lighted with kerosene and candles, and we had a kind of a hand pump at the sink and a masonry heater cook stove that cooked and heated our apartment at the same, our house at the same time,
right.
And had a hot water reservoir and everything. And most of those, all of those technologies I just mentioned are what we would be using here, plus a two-pit composting toilet system. We had a more of a rotating latrine system out there.
Right. So you've already built the shell for that composting system, right?
Yeah, the composting toilet pits are in, and we have the base for the masonry stove that we want to build in the barn. And but now it's basically just a barn.
Right.
And we're trying to go the legal route. We'd like to, you know, work the town, boards and commissions around to agreeing to this kind of lifestyle for people that wanted to do it.
Right. So essentially, you're pioneers.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a backwards sort of a way, we are.
Well, yeah, trying to re-inhabit the earth in a post-apocalyptic situation. I mean,
right.
You know,
a lot of people do that already, you know, and we just want to be able to do it here in the center of town and be legal, that's all.
Yeah, right. Now, when we first met back in the early 80s and we were building our house, we found out, and you and I discussed about this, we found out that we couldn't put in a composting toilet unless we first put in regular plumbing, standard septic system. So is this, ostensibly this is because of a very strong plumbing lobby over in Beacon Hill, but so have you encountered this same dynamic?
Well, in a way, we haven't hit up against that too much, but in large part, it might be because we were taking things sort of a step at a time, and the town of Wendell has allowed composting toilets specifically, you know, in its zoning bylaw for some time, and so it's not, you know, but I haven't yet done the thing with the state. You need to go to the state, and we won't be doing that until we get some approval from the Board of Health here. But when we go before the state, let's say the local Board of Health says yes to our composting toilet, we still have to go to the Department of is it the DEM for the compost toilet approval?
Well, usually composting toilets are approved at the local level as long as they've been certified by the state plumbing board.
As long as the design has been.
Yes, as long as the design has been approved.
This is not one of the approved designs because this is a non-electric design, and I believe that the three approved styles are electric.
I'm not really sure about that, but they're commercial.
Yeah.
And you're planning on building one yourself, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and so, of course, it's a lot easier for bureaucrats to approve something when, you know, they're standard and, you know, they meet whatever kind of specifications they might meet, and they've been tested by Underwriter Laboratory or the National Sanitary Foundation or whoever else tests, you know, appliances. So
there
plumbing appliances
out
are
in,
tested.
There is Charlemont who built a very similar system. This is the Gap Mountain permaculture design. It's a two-pit moldering composting toilet. And they built this system very similar to what we want to do, and they worked through the state and through the plumbers, the plumber board. It was difficult, but they did get approval, and they got approval for five other examples, a total of six of those of that kind that can be done. We need to try to connect up with
that's a good idea.
See if we can slip in under it.
Right. Yeah, what the state should be doing is approving designs and that have specifications, and once, you know, you say, I'm going to meet these specifications, then that's the way it should be done, rather than looking at it as, you know, every single person has to go through an incredible hurdle you know, to get something approved. They should be approving generic designs.
But presumably they have to have been tested, and I think we would be part of the test of this particular design from the state standpoint.
Yeah.
Now, the Clivus doesn't use electricity, and it's a commercial.
Right. Brand, yeah, there are different composting toilets that don't necessarily use electricity, but some of them do have fans and other things, pumps in them, various kinds of things.
Yeah, I think the Clivus that I'm acquainted with has had to have a fan put into it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, there are some models that do have that. Yep.
Uh-huh.
But this doesn't seem really to be the stopping point with us. Nobody's worried too much about that on the boards. The big thing is the electricity.
The lack of electricity, huh?
Right.
Right.
Why do you suppose?
Electricity.
What's their complaint?
Well, you know, let's get real candid. I think there's
you're on the right show for that.
On some of the members of the Board of Health to innovative thinking and to, you know, experimental and to basically breaking the mold and doing things even if it means simpler and with less energy, which I know everybody can kind of get their mind around. And so the board just isn't like, oh, let's get experimental, let's do things in a way that might make more sense as the world unfolds and as we discover things about energy and its consequences. So we haven't gotten past that level, really. We haven't gotten down to, at least in a serious way, to any of the details of our plan yet with the Board of Health.
But Jonathan, I don't understand what would be the safety or health concerns about a lack of electricity.
Well, they point to what the code says, and you know, by a literal reading of the code, you've got to have hot and cold water lines plumbed to sinks. You've got to have a bathtub and a shower and electric outlets in every room and lights in the bathroom, hallways, stairway, hardwired smoke detector. All of this stuff is in the code. And, you know, if I think the board is just kind of partial towards carrying out the code in a rather, you know, kind of cut and dried way.
Hmm.
And another thing, if you live within 600 feet of a utility pole, you have to hook up.
Yes, so that, I mean, I'm looking at the state regulations, which, you know, I'm sure it's 105 CMR 410.
That's right.
258.258, and it says that dwellings that are within 600 feet of an electrical service must be connected.
That's crazy.
Right. Yeah.
That's
and
crazy.
If you're more than 600 feet from electricity, then you can apply for an exemption.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, there's
not. Of course,
not.
We're right on the main street here in Wyoming.
Yes, so you're certainly, I mean, you have the service there.
Who would have ever thought mandatory electrical?
Well, this has come up many times in the past for people that are living in cabins, you know, and trying to live simply.
Mm-hmm.
There was a huge brouhaha about 10 years ago with someone living in a cabin up in Leiden. I don't know if you remember that, but it was.
Oh yeah, very well.
Oh yeah, it was on the front page of the paper all the time, and yeah.
And the way that's been resolved, it seems, is a precedent kind of in our favor. The fellow is being allowed to live there. He has a composting toilet that he installed because they didn't like his outhouse, but he managed after quite a bit of struggle and a lot of support from people in the town to be able to live there without electricity. He's a summer resident.
Oh, so they call it. So it's just summer resident. Is he really a summer resident?
Well, I don't know that makes a difference because the code doesn't distinguish. But
right.
Still, the local board in Leiden decided that he could do that.
Huh. That's interesting.
And that was after quite a bit of, you know, struggle and upheaval.
Oh yeah, some of those pictures on the front page of the Recorder, they look like there are 20 different inspectors and bureaucrats and everything else there at some of those meetings. The guy must have cost you know, the town or the state $100,000 just because he wasn't using electricity and flush toilets.
Well, let me play a little devil's advocate here, Susan and Jonathan.
Mm-hmm.
Why not put in solar voltaics and go DC?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because I don't know of anyone that can point out to me that photovoltaics are what the Earth would consider, you know, what the Earth systems would consider a big favor. I have the feeling that they have a kind of a footprint, an embodied energy thing, and an implications about how much industry to keep on board and all that. Here we are in a kind of a world that's trying to say we've got to contract, but when we go the route of photovoltaics or windmills, we essentially are saying let's keep this level of technology, which which implies, I think, a whole lot of layers of technology under it, and quite an industrial infrastructure, and with implications for our whole life and lifestyles, you know, all of which kind of have or imply a footprint. So I don't think that the renewable energy technologies are the panacea that some people, or that most people, seem to think they are. And I would love to see the energy studies that kind of would help me understand, you know, how they can think the way they do.
Right.
I haven't found them.
Right. So what are you going to do for lighting?
We would have kerosene and candles, kerosene lamps and candles.
So how do you justify using kerosene then?
Well, I have the feeling here, again, I'd love to learn differently, but my belief is that if you get some fossil fuel in a can, it's gotten to you by a much simpler path and has a much smaller footprint than if you get electricity. See, electricity is what we're mainly trying to avoid, and it's usually generated with fossil fuels. And I know that 2/3 of it is lost before it gets to your outlet or your light switch or whatever. And it has an enormous kind of set of implied industries and related industries, and you know, it implies so much industrial activity that I think it's one of the best things to try to wean yourself from. So I guess I'm saying, for every, you know, candle power of light that we turn on in our house, I think if we did it with a lamp, an oil lamp, that it would just be a lot less. It would involve a lot less. Mm-hmm. The footprint would be smaller.
Mm. And if you have the electricity for your lights, you're sure to get a toaster and a washing machine and a vacuum cleaner and a hair dryer and, you know, all the things.
And an electric can opener. How could you live without one of those?
Don't forget the toothbrush.
Yeah. Or an electric jar opener.
So what are you guys going to do for heat?
The masonry masonry stove that we have in mind is the same as we had out on our house in Bear Mountain. It's a finished design. It's got a metal cast iron cooktop, and it's got a firebox, of course, and an oven built into it, and a hot water reservoir. And it's a lot of mass, and it has a long smoke path. And so when you light a fire, you know, you're heating a bunch of masonry as well as the oven and the hot water reservoir and the stovetop, so it functions both as a cook stove and a space heater. And in the summer, there's a flap you throw where you're not heating up the whole mass of the thing, you're just running the flame and the smoke under the stovetop, and then it goes up the chimney.
Right.
So there's a way of having summer fires too that don't cook you out of the house.
Right. Now, we have one of those masonry stoves in our house, and this year, for instance, we've been throwing in slabs from a mill that are considered waste wood.
Mm-hmm.
That when they square off a piece of timber, you get these little sort of concave slabs of wood. We've been using those. What will you be using? I mean, the masonry heat stove, you can use brush and whatever.
Yeah, you can use anything for fuel.
Yeah.
We have, since we kind of cut our teeth as wood, heating with wood out on Bear Mountain, where we were among nothing but trees, and that's what we've kind of gotten used to. I've never tried to find the waste wood for our, we have a masonry heater stove in our house too right now.
Uh-huh.
And we have always patronized local firewood purveyors, I think.
Right.
There's you know, I like to support local people doing.
So, you know, we have a couple of minutes, couple of minutes left. I just wanted to ask you about the resolution that was passed at your town meeting, and was that in November?
Yeah.
Yeah. This went to the town special. It was a special town meeting, and the voters endorsed by a pretty good margin.
Yeah. Could I read
the resolution? Yeah. We got a couple minutes.
Yeah. It was. It's very short. it was in November, and the voters of Wendell. The voters of Wendell hereby recognize the right of its citizens to live using little or no manufactured fuels or electricity, reminding all of us that there are safe technologies for a healthful, fully integrated life in the community that minimize cost and known harmful environmental impacts. We urge the effort of Wendell officials in establishing that right limited only by potential endangerment to others. And it was like a 42-2 vote or so.
Yeah.
Great.
Yep. So in I don't know, a month or so or two, we're going to try to have on this guy who's put out this thing called No Impact Man. Have you heard about him?
No.
Yeah. So so we're going to follow up on kind of your story with somebody who's doing this in a city setting.
Yeah. Oh, great.
And he's trying to have zero impact, environmental impact, I think for a year or something.
Yeah, he's gotten a lot of flack.
Oh, yeah. He's gotten, I mean, it's been on blogs and everything. A lot of people calling him a hypocrite.
No Impact Man.
No Impact Man. Yeah, there's a video and a book and that kind of stuff.
And we would like to check in with you guys again, say, in March or April, and see how you're doing.
Yeah, or let us know if something significant happens with the Board of Health, for instance.
In May, we have town elections, which I think we're hoping will be will be useful to the to improving the outcome. So
to improving the tone of things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. So we will check back in with you, and this is a very interesting project that you're working on.
For sure.
I think a lot of our listeners will want to hear what the final outcome is and are probably rooting for you.
Definitely. So. And kudos to you guys for doing this. That's great.
Thank you, Theo.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
And thank you, Glenn.
Yeah. So thanks a lot for being on the Enviro Show. We've
Happy
been speaking with Jonathan and Susan Von Ronson of Wendell, and we're going to check in with them again on the show. Happy New Year to you.
Thanks for what you guys are doing.
Hey, yep, you too. Keep
bye
up
bye.
The fight. Yep, bye.
Adios. Well, that's great. All right, so you wanted, I know the Emma's Revolution is going to call in.
In a minute or so.
So we could either go onto the bus stop billboard. Oh, but first, you know, in our evaluation segment, we want folks to go to our blog and check out Bob Leverett's PowerPoint presentation.
Oh, yeah.
The Special Public Forests of Massachusetts.
It's a slideshow. It's pretty good.
Yeah. So just Google in the Enviro Show, and you'll see the link for that Joe Zorzi put it up.
Yep. But it was a slideshow that Bob Leverett had done.
Yeah. Yeah. And, of course, as you know, Bob's been on the show. He's like Mr. Old Growth.
He's the old growth guru of especially the eastern U.S.
You bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yep. So we're expecting a call in any minute here from Emma's Revolution, who are a rockin' duo, folk rock music. We played a song earlier. We're going to go out with a song from them at the end of the show. They have a lot of social justice, equality, women's rights, indigenous rights, all people's rights, all creatures' rights, and a lot of earth-based songs, spiritual songs. So
You know, half of Emma's Revolution is Pat Humphreys.
Pat Humphreys.
We've played in San Diego. Yeah, we've played her stuff.
Yeah, we have in the past.
All right, you want to do a little bus stop billboard while we're waiting for them to call?
We might as well get it started, and we can always come back to it.
Today through January 13th, Step It Up, Shut It Down. It's a winner's walk from Brattleboro. It already left Brattleboro. It's headed to Montpelier to tell the Vermont legislature to retire Vermont Yankee and replace it with safe, renewable power sources.
Shut it down.
Yes, and it's sponsored by Safe and Green Campaign, and you can call 802-254-9098 or email safeandgreenwalk@gmail.com.
Shut it down before it melts down.
You bet. More info on that, go to www.safeandgreencampaign.org. And then January 12th and 13th, I'm going to check this one out, down in New York City. The second annual Carbon Trade Summit will be convened in New York City, bringing together representatives of some of the most polluting industries, industry associations, carbon financiers, banks, government officials, and corporate big green.
You know, as they used to say on Star Trek, the carbon-based life forms infesting the planet.
Please pass the hot air sickness bag. All right, participants will include executives from J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, Duke Energy, oh, the usual suspects.
And it's getting better and better.
And many more. And, of course, it's down near Wall Street in one of those new fancy hotels right on the Hudson. So maybe some pirates will commandeer the hotel. Who knows?
Yeah, as Utah Phillips used to say, the earth isn't dying, it's being killed. And the people killing it have names and addresses.
You bet. And to join this effort and take a stand for climate justice, for real solutions, and for the future of our planet, please contact Counter Carbon Trading at actforclimatejustice.org. Or you can just Google in the Enviro Show. You'll find it on our in our events section. Friday, January 15th, 7:30 p.m., Charlie King, Karen Brandau, and Kim and Reggie Harris will rock Greenfield St. James Church, that's on 8 Church Street, to celebrate and benefit the work of organizations such as the National Priorities Project, Trap Rock Peace Center, AFSC, Arise for Social Justice, and Jobs for Justice. Concert information, call 413-584-9556 or email Joe at nationalpriorities.org, our own Joe Comerford, and www.nationalpriorities.org. Fridays, January 8th through February 12th, Nature Discovery Preschool Winter Wonders. This is for kids ages 3 to 5. And that's at the Hitchcock Center for the Environment, 525 South Pleasant Street, Amherst. Hey, who we got on the phone?
Sandy.
Hey there, this is Sandy from Emma's Revolution. How y'all doing?
Good.
Hi. Dio here.
And great to hear you both.
And you as well.
Hey, we played a tune earlier. We're going to play one to go up. But tell people about Emma's Revolution.
Sure. Well, Emma's Revolution is the duo of my partner, Pat Humphries, and myself. I'm going to put her on the phone. Hold on. Kind of around this time of year, there's a song we wrote for an environmental action that took place last year around this time when people were going to be bringing attention to global warming by doing kind of ridiculous things like jumping into cold bodies of water. So we played at this polar bear plunge last January and wrote a song. And we kind of had to write a song to encourage people to take off their clothes for change.
We were going to play that, but I think we'll end up playing Living Planet, and we already played Silent Spring.
Nice. Well, Living Planet's a good song to play for that region because it was written by Jay Mankita.
That's right. Yep, we played his version, too. So
we also sing about issues, you know, about peace and justice and LGBT rights and human rights. Because for us, they're all connected.
Yes.
For sure.
It's all one issue.
Yep. And you do a lot of traveling around, playing?
We do. This is Pat. We spend about 200 days on the road a year. So this particular trip will mostly be up in the Northeast. But we travel all over the U.S. and some outside the U.S. as well.
Geez, Pat, how long have you been a troubadour anyway? Long time, huh?
I've actually been touring since 1984.
Right.
And we actually have a campaign this year in 2010 to get to all 50 states. So for those of you who are listening online, you can bring us to your state, too. We're going to be making it everywhere.
Whoa. What will you be traveling in?
Well, it really depends. You know, we have a hybrid car. We have a first-generation Prius that
cool.
we travel in when it's a drivable distance kind of thing. And then sometimes we fly to a region and rent a car. And often we rent hybrid cars when we can.
Right. Cool.
So we got a couple of minutes. Tell us Emma's Revolution. You know, what's the significance of
what's the evolution
the
of Emma's Revolution?
Yeah.
We're named for Emma Goldman.
All right.
Who lived from 1869 to 1940 and came to the United States from Lithuania, a fierce defender of the right of free speech, the rights of women, and the rights of workers. And there are many, many amazing stories about her. She was said to gather thousands of people in the streets when she spoke, and, you know, this is in the days before sound systems, so that's That's pretty remarkable just by itself.
Right.
But the story that she's really best known for is when she was chastised by a young colleague for dancing at a party, you know, for a behavior unbecoming a woman of her stature. Her actual words to him were, everyone has the right to free expression, to beautiful, radiant things. But it came down through history as her having said, in essence, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution.
Right.
I've heard that before. Yeah.
Here, you know, Sandy and I write about terrifically challenging events and issues, and we realize that people can only take these issues in if there's a way for them to personally connect to the issues, and there's a way for them to remain hopeful and see what in the song what they can do to actually affect change themselves and to really make things better.
Yeah, and Emma Goldman lived and worked in both Springfield and Worcester, I believe.
Oh, that's great.
Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Sure.
Thanks for having us on.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Adios.
Living Planet. It's actually a Jay Mankita song,
but it's their
a cappella version, which
All
is
right.
pretty nice.
And next time, what's up? Attack of the Frankentrees in 2 weeks. And until then, remember to listen to your mother, or else.
Or else what?
This is Dio saying adios.
And this is Glenn Ayers.
If all the world were peaceful now and forevermore, peaceful at the surface and peaceful at the core, all the joy within my heart would be so free to soar. And we're living on a living planet, circling a living star. I don't know where we're going, but I know we're going far. We can change the universe by being who we are. And we're living on a living planet, circling a living star. And if all the world knew justice now and forevermore, justice at the surface and justice at the core, all the joy within my heart would be so free to soar. And we're living on a living planet, circling a living star. I don't know where we're going, but I know we're going far. We can change the universe by being who we are. And we're living on a living planet, circling a living star. And if all the world knew freedom now and forevermore, freedom at the surface and freedom at the core, all the joy within my heart would be so free to soar. And we're living on a living planet, circling a living star. I don't know where we're going, but I know we're going far. We can change the universe by being who we are. And we're living on a living planet.
If the tree falls in the forest, does anybody hear?
The air is polluted, the atmosphere overloaded with carbon, forests are stressed, and government is broke. So what is the Patrick administration planning to do about it? Chop down and burn forests to fuel huge, taxpayer-subsidized, polluting biomass power plants, of course. In the spirit of George Bush's clear skies and healthy forests, the Patrick administration promotes cutting and burning of forests as green energy, even though these biomass power plants pollute more than fossil fuels. To make matters worse, the administration is directing green energy subsidies to build these new smokestacks, which would devastate forests, pollute the air, emit millions of tons of carbon, make rich people richer, and yet only create 1% more power. Please speak up for the forest by calling Governor Patrick at 888-870-7770 and ask him to stop permitting dirty biomass power plants and let the trees live. For more information, see maforests.org.
They want to cut down our trees, poison our air, waste our water away, burn a ton every minute, 60 tons an hour, 1,400 tons a day. Carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, NO and SO2. Oh, gonna find their way to your inside when you breathe that toxic stew. Siltation and soil erosion, taking cover from the land. And when all our trees are spent, it's not 0.5%. Gotta stop it if we can. There are shysters who always sell snake oil. Does payola slip into a hand? Cause what kind of person burns up our trees, poisons the air, wastes our water, our land? Cause what kind of person burns up our trees, poisons the air, wastes our water, our land? 1,000,000 gallons a day of sewage from our town to flush that boiler out, till it gets so thick they have to dump it in the river. Say goodbye to the perch, bass, and trout. This incinerator's inefficient, burns at 23%, an obscene waste of energy. The chromosomal damage and endocrine destruction gives bioabnormalities. There are shysters who always sell snake oil. Does payola slip into a hand? Cause what kind of person burns up our trees, poisons the air, wastes our water, our land? Cause what kind of person burns up our trees, poisons the air, wastes our water, our land? And what do we get in exchange for our trees? Asthma and cancer and heart disease. And what do we get in exchange for our trees? Asthma and cancer and heart disease. And what do we get in exchange for our trees? Asthma and cancer and heart disease.